The loneliest I ever felt was lying awake at 2 a.m. staring at the ceiling, feeling completely isolated from the world, like there was not another human being on the planet that gave a damn about where I was, or how I was, or who I was, or anything. Now the irony here is that I was married at that moment, and the woman that I had dedicated my life to and loved with everything I had was lying 2 feet away from me. But she might as well have been 2 miles or 200 miles or 2 million miles, because there was no way to cross that space, those 2 feet, to alleviate my feeling of loneliness. This is what it's like to be in a bad marriage. Single guys think they're lonely. They are not lonely. They are alone. There's a huge difference. Loneliness is a state of mind more than anything. But when you are in a marriage and you are feeling those emotions, those feelings of isolation, when you've done all the things that are necessary to not feel that, you've found the right woman, you married the right girl, you've done all the right things, you've never done anything to harm anyone, you've given her everything she ever asked for, plus some, and yet for some reason, you're in this situation, staring at a ceiling at 2 a.m., wondering why you feel so lonely. Today, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about marriage. Yeah, it's marriage. There's going to be over 3 million men who are going to cross that boundary into marriage this year. And most of them have no clue what they're getting into. I certainly didn't. This is Life 2.0. Let's talk about it. So as we all know, marriage starts with a wedding. And weddings are really interesting, because here you are getting congratulated, they're feeding you cake, buying you drinks, slapping you on the back. Everybody seems very, very happy. It's a little reminiscent of being the guest of honor at a ritual sacrifice. There's a lot of things in common with it too. They're gonna walk you right up to the altar. Except in this sacrifice, rather than getting the blade, they're gonna put a ring on your finger. And this ring is a much more torturous way to go than the blade. At least the blade, it's over. At least you get one slice and it's done. You're out. But the ring, no. Your sacrifice continues. It goes on for a very, very long time. Most guys get into it thinking they're solving some problems. They think they're going to alleviate their loneliness, that they are going to have a companion, a partner. They're gonna have a partner, for God's sake. Someone who's got their back, someone who's there for them. They're gonna find peace. They're gonna find peace in their lives. That somehow, some way, this is all going to make their lives better. They're gonna have focus. They're gonna be able to prioritize their lives better. They're gonna see the world from a different perspective. Everything is gonna become more stable. It's just ironic that men believe this about it. You know, there's this old song by Joni Mitchell, and it was redone by the Counting Crows, called Big Yellow Taxi. And the main chorus of the song is, you know, and so it always seems to go, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pave paradise and put up a parking lot. It reminds me so much of being married. Because when you're single, you really don't know what you got until it's gone. And then after a while, you realize that you spent all this time, energy, and money building something, and all you did was pave over paradise. Yes. This is gonna be one of those videos. It is my wholehearted belief that life is about accumulating experience, that our experiences are all valuable, they all have value. You accumulate enough experience, and eventually some of this raw experience, so like a raw ore of life, gets transformed into the gold of wisdom. And there are many ways to accumulate this experience. Being a firstborn, it's always been my opportunity to experience things first. And I would run headlong into stuff all the time. And I would gain my experience from actually doing things, making a lot of mistakes. Unfortunately, that's the way a lot of experience is gained. And there is no other way to get it for many people. For many of us, that's just the way you get it. You can read a book about swimming. You can learn all the techniques from reading. You can see all the strokes, all the physics that are involved. And you can understand swimming in every conceivable way. But you will never know how to swim until you get into the water. And this is the problem when it comes to relationships and marriage. So I can tell you all there is to know about relationships and marriage. I can tell you all of my experiences, the wisdom that I have gained, that I have smelted from this raw experience of being there and doing that and speaking to hundreds of men about it. However, that wisdom will not be meaningful to you in the same way that having a firsthand experience is. So there's the problem. You got 3 million guys going to cross the threshold into marriage this year. We can send up all the red flags we want. We can say, man, you shouldn't do this. There's probably all kinds of problems with this. And for a lot of them, for the majority of them, that is the case. For a small percentage, maybe a quarter, they have an opportunity to have a real, meaningful, fulfilling, positive experience. Maybe not a quarter, but maybe 20%, somewhere in that ballpark, are going to have really good, meaningful, healthy relationships. So you've got, say, a 1 in 4, 1 in 5 chance of having a reasonably healthy relationship. But the other 75 or 80% of them are either going to get a divorce or they're going to be really miserable in what's left of a relationship that died long, long ago. And I'm hoping that this kind of content that I'm delivering to you is going to help guys become more aware of the pitfalls that exist in relationships, especially marriage, because it's those pitfalls that lead to the eventual disasters. So today, I want to go through those first subtle signs. I'm not going to go into the big catastrophic things. I've covered those a lot. But during those first few years of marriage, those first subtle signs that you recognize are problematic, but you don't know how to deal with them. You know, you see it happening and you don't understand why this is the case and what you can do, hopefully, to avoid a lot of these things. Because I think that once you see it and you understand that you'll remember this, hopefully, you'll understand what I'm telling you is true, that you'll be able to turn it around before it consumes you, because it will consume you if you don't. And that's the problem that most men have, is we don't recognize the signs when we see them, and we don't take any action, and eventually it builds up and it consumes us. And that's how you end up after, you know, 10 or 20 years going from being in love with this person who you found to be the most ideal human being you could imagine. And that's, for me, what my wife was. She was the best woman I have ever met when I met her. She was the best. I did not recognize the signs along the way. I was either too dumb, too lazy, or a combination of both of those things to do anything about it. And even if I had, I don't know if I could have changed the trajectory of the relationship. Even if I'd caught it right in the beginning, I don't know if it would have mattered, because I've since learned that a lot of her issues were, you know, factory installed. They were preconceived. Her father was an alcoholic. Her parents fought all the time. She had all kinds of issues against men that were probably subconscious, probably still are. She had been pre-programmed as a child to have issues with men. So maybe I couldn't have changed it, but maybe you can. Let's see. Before a man gets married, he doesn't realize it, but he is living in a beautifully simple world where his decision-making process on a daily basis, moment by moment, is very, very straightforward and simple. There is very little drama. There's very little emotion in a man's life most of the time. First of all, we're not emotional beings in the same way that women are. And secondly, we're not drawn to that level of drama. At least most men aren't. I mean, some men will create drama. But for the most part, most guys are not that dramatic. We're just not. After he gets married, he's going to notice that things are going to change quite a bit. Decision making is no longer a simple, straightforward process. In fact, all that emotion and drama that was absent from his life before now becomes paramount in his life, because every decision has layers and layers of emotional backstory to it. And you don't know what all this emotional backstory is until you stumble into something as complex as, I don't know, buying a couch. So in the past, you might buy a couch and just, you look at what your needs are, how big the space is, what color the room is even. Maybe you even have that aesthetic about you where you think, okay, I need to get something that fits in the color scheme of the house. Now you're really, you're letting your feminine out here, all right? So you buy a couch and it's good. It lasts you for years and years and years, no problems. She buys a couch. You're gonna go with her. First of all, you're gonna go to 20 different stores, you know? You're gonna look at pretty much the same couches in every one of these stores. There are subtle differences. They're barely even noticeable, but each one of these differences is critically important to her aesthetic. But you're a good guy, you're allowing for it. It's like, you know, she's gotta be happy, you know? And I'm the kind of guy that wants to make sure my woman is happy with her couch under any circumstance. As you get narrowing it down, you're starting to understand that there is a lot more going on with this couch thing than just the color and the size. That it suddenly now has something to do with a couch that existed decades earlier in someone else's house. And how that couch is too much like this couch. And how that person who owned that couch had opinions about that couch. And now that couch purchasing process becomes about more than just size and color and comfort. It's about some kind of political process that we have to go through to make sure that Susan from God knows where can get a picture of this couch and she can pass judgment on it. That there is a online committee that's involved in this couch buying process. That she has a text group of five or six women who are all giving feedback on all these couches that you're looking at. And that's why you're bouncing around from one store to another. The psychosis involved in this couch buying process is a real story. This has really, really happened. And this is the way that women need consensus in order to have any kind of decision-making ability. They need everyone else involved that aren't involved to also be part of this decision-making process. And so you don't know this is going on in the background. So you're just going from store to store to store, not really sure why this is all happening. And each one of these women has their own opinion. They have an emotional aspect to it. They have their own drama that they bring to it. And so you end up after spending 12 or 13 hours driving around on a Saturday, which you would rather be doing something else, quite honestly, and you don't get a couch. You don't even pick one out. You have made no progress. You are right back to where you started. And now Sunday is going to be spent doing exactly the same thing. This is the craziness that comes with being married. Now, I don't know that there's anything that can be done about that. I don't know there's a solution to that problem, quite honestly, because that's, honest to God, just the way women are. That's just the difference. Probably the best thing that you can do is to remove yourself from the couch buying process. That's what most men would do. It's like, I'm not going to be involved in this. If she needs to have a whole committee with her buying a couch, then God bless her. She should go with her committee and buy a couch. I'm out. I'm going to stay home, wash the car, watch TV, mow the grass, walk the dog, something. Anything else but go couch shopping. The problem there is that now you have relinquished power and responsibility for this important purchase. You have set a precedent. Do you see what I mean? You have set a precedent. She now is not relying on you for these major purchases and making decisions. She is now relying on herself and her posse to make these decisions. You are, without realizing it, offering up this level of autonomy to her that you may not have realized. Because she's got the money in her hands. This couch is going to cost a couple grand. You know, it's going to be a couple $1,000s. And so now it becomes the precedent for the next purchase that's going to be a few $1,000s. You see what I mean? Now you have just removed yourself from a lot of the decision-making process. And as you take yourself out of the decision-making process, you lose power in the relationship. Yeah. Honest to God, that's exactly what happens. So you've just got to tough it out and maybe draw the line on how many, you know, committee members are going to be involved in this process. Because, yeah, if you just give up power, now you're never going to get it back. It's going to be very, very hard to get it back. She's going to think you're being a tyrant when you say no. Another thing that we men get wrong is we think that we're going to get companionship, a partner, someone that we can count on, someone who's got our back, someone who's always there for us, that we're on the same page, that if there's a difference of opinion on something, then we're going to have some kind of negotiation, we're going to settle it, we're going to find a process for compromise. Yeah, compromise, that's the thing. That your opinion is going to be important to her, that she's going to honor your perspective just as you will honor hers. That, unfortunately, is not the case after you get married. Negotiation does occur, but you're going to find that almost everything in your life is some form of negotiation. There is a difference of opinion on almost every single issue. And every single issue, again, has an emotional backstory to it. So, and you may hear the backstory or you may not. And I don't know which is worse, because if you hear the backstory, you've got to live through that experience. But if you don't hear it, you're going to pay the price for it. So probably not hearing it's worse than hearing it. So let's say, for example, on the weekend, Saturday, you're thinking, okay, it's a day off. I want my day off. Saturday's a day off. I'm going to just do my thing. I'm going to play with my car, maybe play out in the yard, maybe work on a project. I've got maybe some TV I want to watch. I'm going to use my free time to do the things that I want to do, because I am a man and I like to do things that I like to do. Well, she doesn't see Saturday as a day off. She sees Saturday as a day to get things done. She's thinking Saturday's the day that we're going to run all of our errands, that we're going to reconnect with all those old people relationships that we have from the past. We're going to have brunch. We're going to maybe have a cookout. We're going to have people over, or we're going to go over to their house. This is a time for connection. Saturday is a time for her to connect with all the people in her life. And she wants to bring you along because you're her partner. Now your brain is thinking, no, I don't want to do any of that. But your mouth is saying, okay, honey, I am right there with you. What do I got to do? Now that only happens for a while. You know, eventually you're going to say, honey, I don't want to go. I just want to stay home. I just want to hang out. And that's going to lead you to a whole host of issues, because now you're going to hear about why it's so important for her to do all these things. She's going to tell you that emotionally, this is an important issue for her. So if she reveals to you all of the reasons why she needs to make all these connections on the weekend, you're going to find out she's got all kinds of emotional issues associated with different people and different experiences in her life. And that this isn't just about her making connections. It's about her dealing with some kind of background noise that she has to deal with. And your being there as part of this process is critical. It's not optional. It's critical. And if you decide that you don't want to do it, well, now you're triggering some other layer of emotional mess up here. You know what I mean? You are not being supportive. You're abandoning her. You're betraying her on some way. And it really has nothing to do with her. It's really just about you wanting to have time to yourself. But she's going to take it personally. She's going to take it personally. And she's going to hold you accountable for it. She's going to feel pain. She's going to feel legit pain that you didn't go and do all these crazy things with her, that you just wanted to spend your time alone on the weekend. She's going to take that personally. And and you're going to pay a price for it. You don't realize it at the time. Like, these are all subtle things that happen in the first couple years of marriage. You don't even realize it's happening. But I'm telling you, it's part of the process. And if you don't call it out when you see it and deal with it, either by putting her in front of a therapist or at least calling it out and letting her know, hey, it's not about you, it's about me. I just need time, that's all. You need time with your friends? You need time with all these people? Go, have fun. I'm all on board, you do it. I'm staying here. You know, I got plans of my own. You know, you have your own emotional shit. My emotional shit is I need a day off. That's my thing. But you got to call it out early. Otherwise, it becomes a resentment. And this resentment builds up over time. And resentment is the key word here. Because this is why relationships fail. Is that women, more than anyone, hold on to these emotional problems, these things that happen, and they remember them, and they ruminate on them over and over and over again, and they interpret them, and then they apply meaning to them, and they take that ruminated memory with all that meaning, and they tuck it away, and it just becomes one layer after another of the little tiny insults that they believed were directed at them, and they become part of the narrative that will eventually be the execution of your divorce. I think peace is the thing that most men take for granted when they're single, because it's so easy for men to find peace as when they're single. If there's not an immediate demand being placed on you, finding peace is just you can fall into your own world psychologically, you can pick up a book, you can watch a movie, you can play a video game, you can turn on the TV, hang out with your friends, you can have a drink. There are so many ways for you just to relax and fall into a place of peace. When you're single, you have fewer demands being placed on you because all you have is a job and a boss. And once they're not around, finding peace becomes a lot easier. However, when you're married, peace is much more difficult to find. It becomes a very rare commodity. And you don't realize how valuable it is because you took it for granted the whole time. You're no longer just having to navigate your own psychology and your own emotion when you're married. Because as a single guy, that's all you're having to deal with. But now, you're walking the landmine of her emotional state all the time. You're always got your radar up and trying to figure out what you need to do to help her manage her frame of mind, help her find peace. And unfortunately, women do not seek peace. They just don't. It's not part of who they are. And so we're aiming toward a goal that we realize helps us soothe our, turbulent brains. And I don't think that they're moving in that direction at all. They're not seeking peace as a sense of relaxation or a way to remove the stress from their lives. I think that they are seeking validation or some other external force or energy to make them feel confident or feel okay. They need someone to tell them that they're okay. I think in a marriage, you've got to express a certain level of leadership, not by being demanding or dominant, but by understanding the characteristics of this woman and how her brain works so that you can lay the groundwork for her to experience what she needs to experience before it becomes a problem. And I'm telling you, that is probably the most essential skill that you have or will need to develop as a man, is you need to understand that they are so different from us, that their brains work differently. Emotionally, they're different. Psychologically, they're different. And you need to understand what it is that they seek to find that level of peace that we find in our own lives. They find it differently through different mechanisms, and you need to be able to identify those mechanisms and help them achieve that level of peace, that sense of serenity inside. Peace probably isn't the right word for a woman. It's more of a serenity that they experience. So yeah, it's a whole nother game. Like I said, when you're single, you took it for granted. When you're single, peace came naturally, healthy. It was easy to do. You knew what your triggers were. You knew there was no stress in your life in that moment. You could fall into an escapism even, where you just play video games for 12 hours. And yeah, you're relaxed, you're peaceful. You're thinking this is a lot of fun. You're not worried about the world outside you. You're focused, you're mission oriented. You're feeling good about yourself. She is not like that. She needs to hear from friends, family, you, that everything's okay, that she's doing well, that she's doing a great job, that she's loved, that she's safe, that she's cared for, that all of her needs are being met, and that she's, fulfilling all of her roles in life in a perfect way, that she's just being the best person she can be. And you just need to continuously reaffirm that to her. Otherwise, she gets scared and freaked out and neurotic, and next thing you know, you're going to have a basket case on your hands, and you're never going to get any peace. You guys are always asking me, how is it I get all this information? How do I have all of this content to talk about during my videos. Well, over the last, year and a half or so, I've been coaching men going through difficulties in their marriages, relationships, divorces, whatever, and divorce recovery. And it has been an enormous amount of insight for me in seeing the commonalities that exist between one set of circumstances and another. We all think that we marry different women, but for some reason we all seem to have similar experiences, which is fascinating in and of itself. Anyway, I do coaching, and if you're going through some difficulties in your relationship, if you're looking down the barrel of a divorce, if you already have gone through a divorce and you're struggling getting yourself back on track, getting your mind right, you know, give me a call. I'm sure I can give you some insights that'll be helpful to you, and there's no point in suffering through this alone. So go to my website. You can do a free 15-minute consultation, you know, and we can talk about it and find out if it's something that I think that might be valuable to you. And if so, we can move forward with it. If not, then we can just have a little chat, and it's always good to have a new friend. So don't suffer alone. For some reason, a lot of men believe that getting married is going to help them become better men. They think that's going to stabilize their lives, and that's generally not the case. I mean, you might become a better man, but not for the reason that you think. Marriage does not provide you with character. Like, it's not a gift that comes with marriage. The fact that you're married does not make you a better human being. What it does is it tests all of your characteristics, and it will reveal to you what your character is. And through that revelation, you will have the opportunity to improve. Yeah, marriage does not grant you character. It reveals your character. So this is what I was talking about in the beginning. You know, you get experience, and you dig up all this experience, you have all this experience, and a certain percentage of it turns into wisdom. It becomes transformed into wisdom. And this is one of those key moments where that seeking stability and that desire for becoming a better man starts to kick in, because you're going to realize that in order for this relationship to survive, you are going to have to be the absolute best human being that you ever imagined. You're going to have to be better than you could have possibly imagined. It's going to force you to dig deep inside for the characteristics that are necessary to figure this out. And even if you do that, even if you become the best man you can possibly be, you read every book, you seek out therapists, you go through deep, heavy conversations with her, trying to understand, trying to seek, connection with her through conversation, which is the way they oftentimes find connection. And you think that you're building on something. But the truth of the matter is, more often than not, that's still not going to be enough. Because here's what happens with women that we don't realize, is that as they're keeping that file of resentments on you, there's a trigger point where there is no road back, and you don't realize that. When you cross that trigger point, wherever that is, it doesn't matter what you do, what you say, how good you become, how good your character is, how admirable a man you are, how successful you are, none of that matters, because she's already made up her mind that you're not that guy anymore. You're not the guy that she thought she was. And now she is just staying because it's too inconvenient and painful to leave. That's basically it. And eventually, the pain of leaving will seem less than the pain of staying, and she will be gone. I promise you that. And oftentimes, the reason why the pain of leaving becomes easier is because she has found someone else to take your place. So you're not going to get stability in a marriage. That's not something that comes with the relationship. The only way you have stability is if you establish it. And the only way you establish it is by being the best man that you can possibly be from day one. In fact, I would argue that before you even enter into this institution, and I do mean institution, like an insane asylum, before you enter into this institution, you need to already be the best possible human being you can be. I mean, you need to have your shit together in ways that you can't imagine when you're 18 or 20 or 25 or even 30. Your maturity level needs to be off the charts. You need to understand the nature of love and understand and have read many books about female behavior and understanding what drives them. They do have a neurosis that makes them very difficult for us to understand. And I say neurosis not in a negative light, but as a factual statement. This neurosis is something that's built into their hard drive. You know, that's just who they are. And it's how they are good at raising children. They're always on the watch. They're always worrying. They're always looking for problems. They're always looking for, you know, issues that need to be dealt with. But when there are no children around, and it's just you and her, she's doing exactly the same thing. That neurotic behavior is always looking for problems, always looking for something that's not right, always looking for an issue, always looking for danger. And yes, resolving that neurosis for a woman is the job of her husband, I'm afraid. Because if you don't resolve that neurosis in a way that is comforting on a regular basis, that, and it's a mechanism that you understand how to work with, and she understands what you're doing, and you have even contrived how this process is going to work, then her neurosis will eventually kill your marriage. It will kill it. Because what she's doing there is she's, as I said, collecting these resentments. It's really not, in her mind, resentments that she's building up. It's threats. She sees all of these activities that you've done that she now is angry at you for, that I'm calling resentments. They're really what she perceives as threats to the relationship, threats to her. And as you can imagine now, when you change the word from resentment to threat, you start to see why she gets so freaked out, why she decides to leave, why she shuts down, because she's starting to feel insecure in the relationship. And the one thing that a woman must feel in order to have a healthy relationship is safe. And if she's feeling all these threats and feeling insecure, well, that's not safe. And I guarantee you, she's going to hold you accountable. She's going to think that you're the threat because you're the only one there. you're the last man standing. You're the only man standing. You're the one who's going to get the blame for it. So her simple math is going to be, well, if I want to feel safe, I need to get away from this asshole. And so, yeah, now you're on your own, plain and simple. And maybe she doesn't even physically leave. Maybe she just shuts down. You know, she gets away from you without getting away from you. She does the worst possible thing. She puts you in purgatory. You're in a relationship that's going nowhere, and she's doing nothing to make it any better. And all you're doing is paying the bills, being the ATM, and catching the occasional fit, emotional explosion from her. And she's holding you accountable. She's blaming you. And every day of your life becomes more and more miserable. That is the state of most marriages in America, and probably worldwide, because I have rarely come across a man who has not had that experience in their life. Recently, I learned that a guy that I consider a friend went through a separation last year. Probably his divorce will be final right about now. I haven't seen him in about 5 or 6 months. But I heard that he's getting married again. Oh, and it's disturbing to me on many levels because I don't think he's quite ready for this endeavor. You know what I mean? I think he's been avoiding me specifically because of this. So he got this girlfriend last summer. And, you know, they, of course, are just having tons of fun sex. This is the guy who messed up his shoulder having sex. I said, man, what did you do? Anyway, he's financially extremely well off. He owns an international law firm. So he's pretty wealthy. He's on a seven-figure income. He's doing quite well for himself. And I'm sure this young woman that he's met, and she's not young, but she's probably about 10 or 15 years younger than him. He's, I think, around 50. So she's probably, I think she's like her 40s. She's around 40. So 7, 8 years younger. Anyway, his first marriage was, I think, semi-arranged because he is of Indian descent. Even though he's an American, he's lived here all his life. His father was into international banking. Anyway, I think that his ex-wife, hopefully ex-wife by now, or soon-to-be ex-wife, you know, she is, you know, one of these Stanford graduates, MIT, I mean, just brilliant woman who's got her, you know, startup company, and she's a founder and all that bullshit, and she's got some kind of gizmo she's trying to sell the world, and she gets, you know, venture capital and all that. So she's got millions and millions of dollars flowing through her hands. And he's got this international law firm that is really an impressive organization. They deal with a lot of intellectual property stuff, and as you might imagine these days, that's big money. So he meets this young woman, and they start having lots of sex, lots of fun, and of course, compared to his ex-wife, who is a real ball buster, she seems like a real sweetie. You know, she works at the government, she's a bureaucrat. I think she works for one of the three-letter agencies, and she's quite happy in her world. You know, it's not anything extravagant. She's not got a lot of money or anything, but she seems to be quite happy. At least that's from what he told me. Now that was, you know, I haven't heard anything about this in at least 6 or 7 months. So I assume that's still the case. The problem I have with him getting married at this stage is not her at all. No, I don't think that she's the problem. She may be the problem. I don't know her at all. He's the problem. And the reason why he's the problem is he has not had enough time on his own to fully appreciate what it is to be single and to be on his own and to understand the gift it is to have complete autonomy and to discover your authentic self. Because when you're in a marriage, it's very, very difficult to understand that, because you've given up so much of your autonomy. And when you do that, by default, you're also giving up a certain percentage of your authenticity. And when you don't have those things going for you, it's very hard to understand who you are going into the next relationship. So my problem with him at this stage in the game is that he doesn't have a clue who he is, and yet he's starting this other commitment. And I don't know if he's doing the prenup thing. I hope to God that he is, because I mean, this is a perfect example of how a guy who's vulnerable psychologically and emotionally falls into a trap with a woman. And I don't think she's a gold digger. I don't think so. She might be, but I mean, he's the kind of guy who will jump on a plane and fly first class to watch a football game across the country on a moment's notice, you know? I mean, that's the way he is. He'll, you know, go to the middle of the country, pick up his son at one of the big universities, and then they'll go up and watch the New England Patriots play at home in Massachusetts. Now, like, he is that kind of guy, and he thinks that's just normal. They're flying first class the whole way, you know? Yeah, for the rest of us, it's like, holy shit, that is like living the rich and famous life. And I guess he does have some appreciation for that, but he's a good guy. He really is. He's a very, very nice guy. But I'm scared for him in this moment. I think I'm going to pick up the phone and talk to him and say, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Do you have any clue what you're getting yourself into? Because I'm scared for him. Anyway, I think that's all I got for you guys today. The trick to having a woman in your life is you better be the best man that you can possibly be for this woman, because she's going to challenge you in every way, shape, and form. There's going to be challenges there that you are not prepared for. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. Unless you have made understanding women like a research project, like, you know, like you take a few classes in school on female psychology, yeah, you're going to find yourself on the, you know, the business end of a terrible, terrible set of circumstances that is going to blow up your life in ways that you never dreamt possible. And going back to where I was in the beginning, in that big yellow taxi, you know, and so it seems to go, you never know what you got till it's gone. You know, you pave paradise and you put up a parking lot. And that, my friends, is the circumstances of the vast majority of men who get into marriage. They never realized what they had, and they paved over paradise. And now they're in this nasty little parking lot that is devoid of life. And that is the perfect metaphor. That is the perfect metaphor for it. Anyway, if you did like the video, please remember to like and subscribe. If you know someone who might be interested in this and who is maybe about to cross over into that magic land of matrimony, please share this video with them. Until next time, remember, stay healthy, and if you can, stay single.